and welcome to episode number 15 of Golf Pod Kentucky, presented by TaylorMade. First of all, happy Derby Week, everybody. We have made it in the 8-month stretch between the rare September Derby and the traditional May Derby. So hope everyone has a safe and enjoyable weekend, whether you will be at Churchill Downs or somewhere else. Hope it's a good weekend, and let's enjoy what is our state's arguably best time of the year. Into the realm of golf, we have our first KGA Am Series competition of 2021 in the books. This past Monday, the University Club of Kentucky hosted the competition, and boy, you could not ask for better weather than we got on Monday. 80 degrees, sunny, 100 plus players there, a lot of smiling faces, so you really cannot ask for anything better on that front. And Stephen Warren posted the low round of our competition so far this season. He shot 68 with a double bogey and a bogey on the card, so it could have easily been lower, but 68 is now the mark to beat. That is the low round. And joining him in the winner's circle in our various divisions on Monday, we had Ryan Yarmatter, Paxton Song, Donovan Childers, Dennis Long, James Harper, Joe Cantrell, and Gary Minch. So congrats to the eight of you. Prior to that, the Kentucky BGA Junior Tour Spring Classic went off at Juniper Hill Golf Course. Unfortunately, it was the first tournament of our 2021 campaign that got affected by weather, so some different divisions ended up having their competitions shortened in terms of the number of holes they got to play. But in the end, we got it all finished, and the players coming out on top with victories were Justin Begley, Athena Singh, Landon Stillwell, Georgia Scott, Carter Denton, Knox Taylor, Emily Miller, and Elijah Erksleben. So well done to each of you. Coming up next on our tournament docket, the KPGA will be having the Pro Senior at the Big Spring Country Club's Harmony Landing Course. That takes place Monday, May 3rd. Huge field there. Looking forward to what will hopefully be a good day of weather. It looks a little iffy right now, but still a few days for that to change. And then the day after that, on May the 4th, be with you, the U.S. Open local qualifier in Kentucky takes place at Cherry Blossom. And folks, that field is absolutely loaded. There are about 100 players signed up to compete in that, and a who's who, really, of amateur and professional golfers in Kentucky are lined up to tee it up that day. It's going to take a low number to get through to what will be final qualifying for the U.S. Open. And we're very excited to see how that unfolds. Expect a lot of good golf, and we'll be very curious to see who the players are that move on to the next stage and qualifying for what will hopefully end up being a trip to Torrey Pines next month. Last thing to touch on, and this will center around our guest in the episode, but Bill Coomer, our retiring director of amateur professional competitions, is the guest on this episode. For those of you who don't know, Bill has been with our organization for 26 years. It's been a remarkable tenure for him, and Friday, April 30th marks his final day after a quarter century of working at Golf House Kentucky. And, I mean, you cannot say enough good things about Bill. We have a story that's now live that kind of touches on this from a written perspective. This podcast will serve as kind of a way for Bill to explain what he's seen, what he's done, how the organization has changed, and how golf in Kentucky has changed ever since he took this position. I, for one, am going to miss Bill profusely. I've only been at Golf House Kentucky for 2 years now, but Bill has always been extremely kind, friendly, and just a great person to lean on, whether it's work-related or not. And he's not disappearing entirely, as we will touch on during this conversation, but he is certainly going to be missed as a staff member, and there is no replacing Bill. So without further ado, here is our retiring director of amateur and professional competitions, Bill Coomer. All right, I am now joined by the man and the legend himself, Mr. Bill Coomer. We are recording this on Tuesday, so you are about 3.5 days away from your final day as a Golf House Kentucky employee. First of all, how does it feel to be retiring?
absolutely fabulous. And the closer I get to it, the more fabulous it becomes.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds a little harsh because the employment of and all the people that I've been a part of, the families, the friends, professionals, the trips I've made, the opportunities, the hard knocks, the late hours, all of that is part of life. You know? But my life's been awfully good, you know. And the last 26 years is just kind of icing on the cake.
Let's go back to before your time at THK and talk about your life growing up. And the extent to which I know about this is that you played football for the University of Kentucky, which is quite an accolade. So talk to me about that and everything else that happened in your life pre-golf.
Well, I will. As a matter of fact, that's another special time. Grew up in a smaller town, Somerset, Kentucky, Pulaski County, down by Lake Cumberland. Most of my family, my father, mother, sister, and then we have extended family throughout that whole area. Aunts, uncles, grandmothers, grandfathers, and all. But I was athletically inclined as a kid. You know, played every sport I could think of, or at least that was available to me. But what is probably strangest is that golf was more a recreation sport for me. It wasn't a competitive nature for me to play golf, and I didn't play in any kind of team golf environment at all growing up. I played football, played baseball, played basketball until I got not so tall after everybody shot up above me. I got to play some tennis, swam a little bit here and there, you know, but just an all-around kid that likes to play sports and had a lot of opportunities to do so. Played football throughout high school, a little bit of tennis there also, and then living in Lexington, my choice was to go to UK. I looked around at some other opportunities and found the UK offered me the best economical situation, mm-hmm. you know, living at home, but I wanted to try my skills and talent, see where I could go with my football interest. And went into 1973, which if you look at the record books, you'll see that was the first year the Commonwealth Stadium was built and played in. So that was another first for me, having a chance to do that. Played some as a freshman, not on the varsity team, but I met a lot of great athletes. We had some All-Pros on the team there and all SEC players, and found out that that's a different level than what I thought I could aspire to. And after a year, thought, yeah, I've enjoyed it. Let's move on.
Yeah. So you ended up going to Nashville and you spent some time as a club professional at golf courses down there. Where did you work and how was that experience?
Yeah, the Nashville trip was a separate career to start with. My emphasis was in actual entertainment. So mm-hmm. I went there, and at the time there was a place called Opryland, which is right. part of the Grand Ole Opry, and it was a musical theme park. So my background was went in as a technical support. I did some design, master carpentry, scene design, stage management, company management, a lot of stuff that helped me grow in that industry. And then there was some changes made to the corporate level and found my way out of it. Stayed in theater for a little bit longer. Then the golf came as a part-time job, looking for something else to do. And went in as a cart cleaner and a ball chaser kind of thing at a country club. After a few months, the head pro says, "Are you interested in the business of golf?" I said, "Well, you know, teach me a little bit." So that was where it started, and that was toward the late 80s at that time. So I stayed there as an assistant professional, Hillwood Country Club, that's where I started. And I was there for about 2.5-3 years, and then moved to Franklin, which south of Nashville, and had a couple of different opportunities to be a head pro and a general manager at not only a private but also a public course. And that pushed me into the mid-90s.
What was the emphasis on you kind of leaving the greengrass world and getting into administration? I know that you were looking at some jobs with the Tennessee section before ultimately coming on board at Golf House. So what appealed to you so much about getting into the tournament line of work?
Well, I to be quite honest, it wasn't really the tournament line I was looking for. I was looking for administrative line. The day-to-day golf experience, being at a club or a golf course, I felt like I was moving ahead in my career, but I didn't really want to keep that as my emphasis. I wanted to find something that would help me grow a little bit more throughout the industry, you know, so whatever that administrative position would be, whether it had been in membership or in junior golf or something like that, that's where the jobs were opening at the time in Tennessee. And applied and went through the interview process and was given some really positive feedback. Didn't happen to get those jobs, but I think that connection also helped me open up some others. There were some administrators there that knew what was happening in Kentucky and Indiana and other surrounding sections. And one mentioned that the tournament director's position in Kentucky was open and got me the connection to being interviewed.
Sure. Yeah. So. Now, in your 26 years at Golf House, there's obviously been a lot that's changed, but to start off your career, you were working out at Bardstown Road along with the other very few staff members at that time compared to what it is today. So those early years before Golf House was built and Golf House Kentucky wasn't even a thing at this point, how would you describe that period for those who aren't familiar?
The facility was a strip mall. It was an office building kind of thing. And there were insurance companies and driver's license bureaus. There was, to be honest, there were some salons that were there and old bakery good kind of companies and a lot of different industries within that whole section. But we had, I think there was six maybe at the time, and with an executive director and junior director, myself, handicapping director, you know, a couple other people, and then some interns to help throughout the summer. But it was a challenge because of the space, actually. You know, we all had our own offices, but for storage-wise, any equipment that we had to go off the property into a storage area, storage bins. And by the time we had accumulated all the things we needed, which a few years into my tenure, we had three separate places that we had stuff, you know, such as flag sticks and tee markers and paint and tents, and you just name all those things that you can think of that you might need, and we couldn't all be fitting in one storage area because of the junior program or administrative records. So that was a challenge. You know, we'd be finished at when it got dark, and then we'd still be out getting all that stuff back to where it's supposed to be, and then get home and then come back the next day. So that was a challenge to begin with. The space in the building worked well enough for us, along with a good sized boardroom, you know, so we'd have plenty of meeting space for that. I noticed the first couple of years that at that time we were taking paper entries for all the events. So we had a lot of mail being handled by that small staff. And one of the funny things is the day that the junior tours would open for registration, we'd have lines of cars with parents and their packets ready to hand at the door. Okay, I want my kid in every one of these. So we were all lined up grabbing satchels of mail and getting those processed.
Oh, what a world. It's crazy how much it's changed in 20 years, that whole process. But one thing I was thinking about earlier that crossed my mind that I want to pick your brain about is that, not to say that before the mid-90s, Kentucky golf wasn't on the map at all, but at the same time, you look at it, and in 96, you had the first of what's now three PGAs that have been at Valhalla with a fourth on the way. The Ryder Cup came a dozen years later, and you had guys like Kenny Perry, Justin Thomas, J.B. Holmes. So would you kind of agree that that late 90s, early 2000s period was key in Kentucky golf? And if so, what was it like to be a part of that process?
It was very key. The folks that you've just mentioned, you know, but I want to back up and also mention those folks that we know and have already lost.
Right.
I mean, our Gabe Brewers, our the Frank Beards and the Bobby Nichols that are still out there. Jody Muds,
yeah.
You know, so those folks were making a name. Ted Schultz, Steve Flash, you know, folks that were a little bit before I came along and started really making a noise on tour. Not only did we have that late 90s groups of our own, but that was also the Tiger era's beginning.
Yeah.
So golf really took a big jump ahead on a national, international scale.
Right.
And to have the PGA show up and on our door 4 years within that same period in the same place really kicked us up a notch in Kentucky. And having those opportunities as a staff to be a part of that, whether I know some of my own responsibilities at the PGA were international connections through the media. You know, not that we were doing something with them. We were taking them where they need to be. You know, just a shuttle service. We also would manage the range in the short game area before the players made it to the golf course. Met and, you know, worked within that structure of what they needed. And all the volunteer groups throughout the club in Louisville, Lexington, all those members who became part of the whole experience. Not only were the golfers that you knew as amateurs coming in, but their families are coming in and helping out. So now here we are, 2021, and we're looking, 3 years from now is another PGA. We've experienced the Ryder Cup. Obviously one of our favorites since U.S. won.
Rare occurrence.
And we had some homegrown boys there too. Gosh, you know, how much better could it be for our experience with the PGA Championship and Ryder Cup here?
Exactly. So since we're on the subject of talking about golf tournaments that go beyond Kentucky, you have had the opportunity to work at national championships conducted by the PGA of America and the USGA. So what were those and what did you do for those events?
Yeah, I was. It's been, let's see, 2014 and 15 were the back-to-back years I was asked to come to French Lick. You know, so it wasn't a big travel arrangement for me, but I was able to get there and officiate. I was actually a rules official for the U.S. State Team Championship, which was conducted for several years by the USGA.
Yeah.
And then the next year was the site for the PGA Senior Championship. And again, I can't thank all those groups and administrative bodies enough to include me and let me experience those international flavor of competition. The officials I worked with, the players I met, just the whole experience. Thankfully, I had that, and I wouldn't take a plug nickel for any of it, you know, to give it back, because it meant so much to me.
Two-part question here to piggyback off of that. Were there opportunities for you to branch out and leave this position to go elsewhere and maybe take higher roles? And then second part of that, if there were, or even if there weren't really, was there any desire to go elsewhere?
I've not had any desire to leave this organization since I began. The only change that I had some interest in was after the first administration change, when the first executive director change was made, I did apply. I looked at the job as, again, as a stepping stone in my career. Obviously, I didn't get it, and I don't regret any decision made. I think at the time, the needs were there, and for someone else to kind of get us in the next step, because they had some experience where they needed that experience. But I've been asked about it, and you know, not seen or been inspired to look. I always wanted to be. I'm home in Kentucky. I'm home in this area. My family still is within just a driving distance for most of them, and I didn't really see something that was more attractive than what I was given the opportunity to do here.
All right, folks, it's time for some good old-fashioned TaylorMade talk. And as you probably know at this point from hearing me talk about it, TaylorMade is willing to do just about whatever it takes to make golfers like you better. They don't just play the game, they obsess over it. So they gladly create thousands of different prototypes of different clubs, golf balls. They run hundreds of thousands of simulations, and they travel the world, even during the pandemic, just to hand inspect materials. Whatever it takes to make the best quality equipment for our golfers, they are willing to do it. And not everybody shares this passion. That should be noted, that not everybody will do the things TaylorMade does to achieve excellence, but that drive is not going away anytime soon. They are beyond driven. They want to know if you are too, and in order to get some TaylorMade equipment into your hands, as always, reach out to Mark Cray, the TaylorMade sales rep, talk to your PGA professional, or head to TaylorMadeGolf.com and get a fitting scheduled when time works for you. Let's go ahead and get back to Bill Coomer now. So with Golf House Kentucky, obviously, as we've referred to already, it's changed quite a bit in the last quarter century. There are a bounty of new programs that are here, plenty of new tournaments, and quite frankly, I mean, more people who are interested in the game right now than there would have been in the mid-1990s. So where do you see the future of this organization? Where do you think it's going to be in the next quarter century as things continue to roll along?
That's a good question. I think the best answer I can give would be to, I hate to say this, but it's like, stay tuned. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some changes. There's some challenges. You know, we're coming out of a pandemic that it really gave us, in some ways, a very positive look at the game. Unfortunately, it took that pandemic to do it. I'm hoping that it's at least making it's giving us a road to travel, not another bridge that needs to be built. And I'm hoping that is all-inclusive, and I'll use that phrase because I feel like that's something that we are going to really be a part of for the next few years. How inclusive can we be? How is this game going to spread across our civilization? And we need to recognize the lack. We need the diversity included. We need to not be not be isolated. Yeah. And I sure hope that the leaders of this industry keep the eye on the prize, because it's not going to happen just with what we've done in the past. We've got to open a lot of doors and keep those doors open.
Since we're on this front, in a separate conversation, we talked about what Deshaun Johnson said in our KGA board meeting recently. Do you want to share what he said and what your takeaway was from that? Because I know that you were pretty moved by what he had to say.
I am. Deshaun has been a good acquaintance. We have had a lot of opportunities to work together. We've had a few, his being part of the First Tee programs, and I've had a little bit of that opportunity. I've done some programs with the Shawnee groups that even before that, and had great opportunities to meet and enjoy the companionship with the folks there at Shawnee and in that part of the community. His remarks included the fact that, he's looking at the game under this flagship, the Golf Association, and hasn't seen a lot of what he said was his vision, his...
He said people that look like me, I think were his words.
Yeah, you're exactly right. People that look like me, and I thought, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not like it's been zero. We've had opportunities. I have had opportunities to be in the African American community and had participation from some of those interested players. But what do you do? You hope that they want. You hope that the open door policy is something that is something they see themselves looking at, the inclusion. I'll say it again, let's keep the doors open. Let's invite and keep inviting. Don't just say we have a program. No, we don't have a program. We have an industry. We have an organization. We have a game. We have a game that everyone should enjoy. Everyone should have an opportunity at participating in. And if our organization, if KJPGA is really the leaders, then by golly, let's lead.
Yeah.
And let's keep leading.
Well said. I couldn't say it any better myself. Now let's take a step back and look at your 26 years. This is going to be a tough question to answer without any thought, but do you have any particular moments, memories, or any specific tournaments that really stand out to you in your head and make you smile now that you reflect on everything?
I have very many. One story that always makes me smile, and I've already had an opportunity to share that just a few days ago, was the fact that we have a state that's very wide. Mm. We have a lot of travel time between Ashland and Pikeville.
Yeah.
Ashland and Paducah, and Pikeville and Paducah. I at one point had a tournament that was being conducted in Paducah, and a player from the Ashland area came and played and enjoyed it. He told me he did. He said, by the way, this was really great, but if you could do me a favor, the next time you schedule something, could you do that scheduling in Canada because it's closer to me? So I thought, well, that's something that I probably will never accomplish. But it was something that was really special, and I've thought about it a lot, and it's been a fun thought to keep up with. I think the success of some of the guys you were mentioning, J.B. Holmes, looking at what a fabulous and strong player he was and how he dominated for so many years through the junior ranks and into college, and then obviously getting on tour. Seeing him play was special, extremely special for me to experience that. You know, I've had friends that have been part of my own school, classmates. Myra Blackwelder was actually in my class at Lafayette High School, and we have known each other forever and ever. Her time on tour and her time in coaching and being part of all of golf throughout Kentucky, and then her family also has been a special relationship for me. The names of my associations with a golf association board of directors, the professionals that I've met that have come and gone, all of those folks, my opportunity to meet and greet and be friends with the PGA presidents throughout my career. Getting to go to places that I had no idea the golf course was there. You know, I think another quick story would be to say I've mentioned if I ever did retire, which is coming now, maybe I ought to just get a bus and hire myself out to take people to golf courses because I know where most of them are now.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd be a good bus driver.
No. That's great. Now, looking forward now, this will be the kind of the second to last question I've got for you, but you and your wife, Sharon, are going to certainly enjoy these next years to come. So what is on the docket for you in retirement? And I know you're not disappearing completely. You'll be doing some rules officiating for us still. But beyond that, what will retirement consist of for you and your wife?
The fact that we have been less together than I wanted, I think that's the case for every pro.
Sure.
Everybody that's in business.
You know,
they want to be a full-time husband, full-time father, and still be successful at their own work. So minute after minute after minute is going to be part of my plans is to be with my wife as much as I can. We love our home. We love being in Louisville. We don't have plans to move. If there is a second, third, fourth career, whatever is out there, I'm probably looking at something that's in the literary field. I love to read and I love to write. And if I find some subject matters that kind of spur my talents or skills, you know, I'll pursue that. I've had a lot of experience with music and being in choruses, and if there's opportunities after this pandemic has let us back in, that might be part of it too.
Excellent. So we're going to wrap this up now by doing the ceremonial rapid fire segment. So here are a few questions for you. No need for an explanation or anything, but whether you've played it or not, or whether it's just going there to work, what would you say is your favorite golf course in the state?
Traditions Golf Club.
Interesting. Who is the best golfer that you have seen the state of Kentucky produce?
Justin
Thomas. When you play, would you rather be walking or riding?
Riding.
What is your favorite golf book?
Anything that has Arnold Palmer in it.
If you could play any golf course in the world now that you're retired, where are you going to be going?
St. Andrews.
Last question for you. From a non-golfing standpoint, where would you most like to go to vacation while you're retired?
Monte Carlo. Without explanation, Monte Carlo. Yeah.
I can see why. Well, I'm going to cut you loose on that front, Bill. There are obviously many things that could be said about you and your career, and I will share most of those for just when it's the two of us without a microphone on us. But I sincerely appreciate your friendship and you helping me out the last couple of years ever since I came on board. You are a true friend, I should say, and you'll be dearly missed. So thank you for everything, my friend.
Thank you for everything.